What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to explore and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Flu season is officially upon us. U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends almost everyone 6 months and older get a flu vaccination each year. Seasonal flu is contagious respiratory illness. Worried about catching the flu? Learn all about the flu and how it differs from a cold. Dr. Leonard Friedland, an expert on infectious disease and immunization, talks flu 101. Dr. Friedland is Vice President, Director, Scientific Affairs and Public Health, Vaccines, North America at GlaxoSmithKline, a pharmaceutical company. Dr. Friedland, welcome to 411 Teen.
Well, thank you very much. It's a great opportunity to talk about flu. It's that time of year.
Yes. Well, as we talk about it, first of all, what is the flu or influenza? What are we talking about?
We're talking about a viral illness. It's contagious, and it's a respiratory illness, and it's caused by a virus. And it can lead to from very mild to very severe conditions, sometimes even to death. And the most important thing about this is that the best way to prevent the flu is to be vaccinated.
Okay. How is it spread? How is it contracted? Can you share that with us, please?
Right. So it's a virus illness, and it's a respiratory viral illness.
Okay.
And it's spread by droplets that are made when people cough or sneeze or talk. And those droplets are spread out, and they're spread out in the air, and they can land in the mouth or noses of people who are around them. And occasionally, those droplets can land on a surface, and people could pick them up when they touch the surface, and then they take their fingers. And without even thinking about it, we're always putting our fingers near our mouth and our nose, etc. So it's respiratory. It's contagious. It's spread from person to person, and it's from coughing and sneezing. It's spreading those droplets.
Okay. That's important for us to hear, because at some point, not now, I would like us to deal with what we often call the 48-hour, 24-hour stomach flu, and that's a whole different kind of thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. So
okay.
People call all sorts of illnesses the flu.
Right.
And sometimes it's a gastrointestinal thing or a stomach flu, as you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be a respiratory illness that's, you know, just kind of mild with coughing and sneezing.
Mm-hmm.
That could be from all different types of viruses that occur in the colder months of the year. The flu is a really serious illness, and when you get the flu, it's not your common cold.
Okay.
It's the type of illness that sort of lays people up in bed, and they miss school if they're students, and they miss work if they're adults, and it's serious. If you have the flu, it's something you don't want to get again.
When is one contagious? I mean, at what point, can they spread it by coughing? And how long are they contagious?
Yeah, that's a really important thing to talk about. So people tend to be contagious. In other words, they can spread it, as you put it, for about a day before they even start to have their own symptoms. So you could be walking around feeling just fine, and you could be spreading it for about a day before then you start with your own cold, illness with fever, fatigue. We'll talk about what the symptoms are, but it can start being spread a day before you even become sick with symptoms, and then you can spread it typically for 5 or 7 days after you become sick. And that's really important because you don't want to get other people sick,
right?
And it's very contagious. So a day before you start getting sick and upwards of a week after you're sick.
Okay.
It can be spread.
Now, the severity, you said it can range from relatively mild symptoms to very serious symptoms and possibly death, correct?
Absolutely. So influenza, the illness, it can be unpredictable as far as the type of illness that a person will have when they get sick with the flu. It can range from very mild to very severe. And on the severe end, it's when people are laid up in bed, missing school, missing work, high fevers. They can get other complications like pneumonia and ear infection.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally they can end up in the hospital because they get dehydrated or they develop a pneumonia. And unfortunately, in some years, it's been reported that up to 39,000 Americans can die from influenza. And we can talk a bit more about who's at risk.
That was my next question. You were reading my mind because I was going to ask you, who is at high risk? I mean, for getting the flu, because I would think something as serious as this is, there's going to be a segment of the population, maybe the elderly, the young, whomever, that are at high risk. So let's explore that, please.
Right. So I think the first thing to say about that is that everybody's at risk for influenza.
Mm-hmm.
And even healthy people can get very severe influenza. And even if you don't have a severe case of influenza, as we said, it's very contagious, and you could spread it to somebody who's at higher risk for having serious complications. So who are those people? Who are those that are at higher risk for serious complications? But again, anybody can really have a bad case of flu.
Okay.
And so those tend to be the very, very young, so infants, little babies,
mm-hmm.
the elderly, people 65, 70, and older, and then pregnant women are at high risk for influenza for themselves and also for the child that they're carrying can get sick as well from the mother being sick with influenza. And then people will have underlying certain medical conditions like diabetes or heart disease or asthma. And there's a lot of people with these medical conditions. So we want to make sure that we protect everybody. And the best way, again, is through vaccination.
So what you're saying is some folks with chronic conditions, that condition itself renders them very susceptible to the flu.
That's right. If they have chronic medical conditions and they get a case of influenza, they can get a very severe case of influenza. And also then their general medical condition declines because their health is at risk. So, yes, people with chronic medical conditions are at higher risk. And, again, the very young, the very old, and pregnant women as well.
And those, I would guess, with compromised immune system, someone who may be HIV or lupus, they would be at high risk. Okay? Right?
Yes, absolutely. People with compromised immune conditions, number one, because of their condition, or because of the medications they're taking to treat their condition. That can depress their immune system. And that's why the recommendation that the Centers for Disease Control makes, which is that virtually everybody above the age of 6 months should receive a flu vaccine every year. The reason that the recommendations are for everybody rather than for certain segments of the population is because really everybody's at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so contagious, we want to make sure that we're not spreading it within our community to our loved ones and our coworkers and the students that we're at school with as well.
Of course, we're sort of at a disadvantage by nature of the progression of the disease because you were saying that, you know, you could spread it a day before you have the symptoms, right?
Yeah.
So you could be spreading it and not even be aware that you have the flu at that time.
That's right. And the other thing, and I'm sure we'll get to this, is that the vaccine to prevent influenza, it takes about 2 weeks from when it's given to when it starts to work. And so if people start to feel, I'll wait until I start to feel sick and then I'll get my flu shot, it's going to be too late.
Right.
Because we need to get it on board and tell our body to get ready to fight off an infection. And it takes about 2 weeks for the vaccine to really start to show its benefits.
Well, what are the symptoms? How does one know they have the flu?
Right. So the flu symptoms are things such as fever, sometimes fever with chills. Shaking chills, sore throat, runny nose, cough, muscle and general body aches, headaches, feeling tired, and sometimes people will even have some vomiting and some diarrhea, which can make it be a bit confusing to think you have, you know, some sort of stomach bug. But it's generally this respiratory type of symptoms with fever, cough, sore throat, runny nose, headaches, shaking chills, muscle aches are the type of symptoms that can occur.
Do the symptoms vary with age? By that I mean, are the symptoms the same for infants as they are for adults? Is it manifested any differently?
In general, the symptoms are fairly similar. Some reports say that children can have more of the vomiting and diarrhea than the adults. Yet the what's very common across all ages is this fever, cough, runny nose, sore throat, muscle aches, feeling sick. It's also important to point out that not everybody will have a high fever. So just because you might have all the other things and not a high fever, it can still be influenza. But the other thing about it is that you also feel sick and laid up in bed, unable to go to school, to go to work, to do your schoolwork if you're a teenager or a college student, to do your work if you're in the workplace. And let's say you're a parent, unable to care for your children or for the elders that you may be caring for. And so it's very disruptive, and occasionally it can be very, very severe with people being hospitalized. There's over a few hundred thousand hospitalizations every year in the United States from influenza, and in some years, as stated, you know, we can have over 30,000, 40,000 deaths from influenza. So this is something to avoid, and vaccination is our way to prevent this, and there's a lot of different options now for vaccination, which is, I'm sure, something that we'll talk about.
Yeah, we're going to get into that. Briefly, before we take a break, can you share when is the flu season? When does it actually start?
Yeah, that's great. So we tend to think of flu season as starting up in around the fall, in the late October, early November time frame, going through December, January, February, March, and occasionally even into April. So it's really the fall and the winter and the very early spring that is flu season here in the United States.
Okay. And it's different depending on the hemisphere, that whether you're in the northern or the southern hemisphere, correct?
That's right.
We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you and we'll continue with Flu 101. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me via phone from Philadelphia is Dr. Leonard Friedland. He is a flu expert, and he is sharing all types of information about the flu. Dr. Friedland, I had to somewhat interrupt you when we were talking about the flu, but as I understand, the flu goes according to the hemisphere, okay? I'm thinking about, like, if you're in the northern hemisphere or the southern hemisphere, because the winters would be different then, right? And that's when we usually see it. And I'm just, I don't know, I just thought that might be the case. That's when we usually see the flu in the winter, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So here in the northern hemisphere, in the United States, and in upwards in Canada, in the northern hemispheres, we tend to see influenza peak in sort of the, you know, start up in the November time frame, go through December, January, sort of often will peak in February, and then we still see some flu in March, and even occasionally it can go through April and May. But it's really that fall-winter season. Yet if we lived in Australia, where it's now it's the spring summer months in Australia, they're not going to be experiencing influenza now. They'll experience when it's their fall and their winter.
Exactly. Are there go right ahead.
Let me say one of the important things about that influenza will be peaking at different times of the year in different places around the world is something that scientists can look to take advantage of. because influenza can occur at different times of the year all mm-hmm. around the globe, we can look to see what type of influenza is occurring in other parts of the world. So when it is flu season in Australia and it's the summer months here and we're not experiencing flu, we can see what type of flu is causing mm-hmm. influenza in the southern hemisphere. And then we can say, well, when we put our vaccine together for the northern hemisphere, we can look into what was occurring in the southern hemisphere, and then that will help us select the right flu strains for the northern hemisphere. So we look to take advantage of knowing what's happening at other times of the year mm-hmm. to make the best vaccine available for the public.
Well, you know, are there, I guess my question I'm trying to pose to you is, are there physical conditions that influence the flu? I'm thinking about conditions like of the atmosphere, humidity, UV rays, sunlight or the lack of sunlight. Do these kind of conditions influence flu survival, virus survival?
Yeah, there are many different theories, and there are many mm-hmm. different lines of investigation that are looking at what's tried and true to understand what's happening with influenza is to sample secretions, nasal drip, and snot from people who have cold viruses, and see actually what's causing it. Is it influenza or some other virus? And that's the best way for us to know actually what's happening with the viruses. And in fact, there are over 100 laboratories that are set up through the World Health Organization all over the globe that are constantly collecting samples from people who have cold symptoms so that we can understand what are those viruses, how potent are they behaving in ways that we would expect or differently, and we use that information to make the yearly vaccine.
I see. You mentioned that the actual virus can last on surfaces. It can last on plastic or metal. How long is the flu the virus itself vital on surfaces? How long does it last?
Yeah, it can last on surfaces for sometimes hours. When people are coughing and sneezing, it's usually not just one person. It's a lot of people who mm-hmm. are doing that. And so when one person sneezes 2 hours later, somebody else is going to be sneezing perhaps in that same area. So the virus will be on these surfaces often very commonly because there's so many people who are spreading it.
Mm-hmm. How does a physician diagnose the flu? I mean, how does the flu differ from a cold? And I know you touched on this somewhat earlier.
Yeah, so the difference between flu and your common cold is its severity.
Okay.
In general, when people have a common cold, they'll have maybe a low-grade fever, some runny nose, cough, maybe some sneezing, a little post-nasal drip, and they just don't feel all that well. But within a day, they're starting to feel better, and they can typically go about their work. They can go to school, do their schoolwork, go to their jobs, take care of their kids or their parents. That's your common cold, let's say. With influenza, it's often much more severe. And mm-hmm. people will say when they recover from influenza, boy, now that was something. That's something I don't mm-hmm. want to ever have happen again. Because in that situation, often they're not able to do their schoolwork or to attend school or to go to work or to care for their kids. And they're really just laid up in bed. And it's just not your common cold. It's something much more severe. And in the severe cases, it can be so severe that people end up in the hospital because of dehydration or pneumonia. And unfortunately, as mentioned, some years we can have 30,000, 40,000 deaths from influenza. So it's just not your common cold. It's much more severe.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, since we are talking about a virus, basically, one does is the physician usually allows the virus to run its course. So when one gets medication for the flu, are they just treating the symptoms? Because the symptoms can be very, you know, obnoxious themselves.
Right. That's an important thing to talk about. So one thing to mention is that if somebody has a serious illness and they're really laid up and sick with what they think is the cold virus or flu or whatever it is, number one, they should speak to their doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And speak and get checked out and make sure that that they're doing well and that they're on the road to recovery. And if it is indeed influenza, and there are ways that doctors and healthcare providers can test for this with very simple, quick tests, there are some medications, we call them antiviral medications,
mm-hmm.
that if given early in the influenza illness can shorten the duration, the length of how long they're sick, can shorten it by a few days at times. So that actually is medicine for influenza.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a prescription medicine. I think the medications that you're speaking about is when people self-medicate, is when they're over-the-counter medications. And there they are just treating the symptoms. It is not treating the infection. The infection is not going to be impacted by those over-the-counter medications. They can make you feel better. They can bring down your fever. They can dry up your secretions.
Mm-hmm.
But the virus is still there. And, you know, most people will recover from influenza. Occasionally, if they're really sick, the antiviral medications can shorten the illness and help as well. So it is important to check in with your healthcare provider and make sure that you're on the right road to recovery, that you don't need any specific intervention. Because the antivirals can be very helpful, particularly for those who are at high risk for complications, the elderly, pregnant women, people with chronic medical conditions.
How important or what role does general hygiene play in lessening the chances of contracting the flu? And I'm thinking like hand washing, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely. And there are lots of things that we can do to keep ourselves healthy throughout the fall and winter months. When influenza and other viruses are commonly circulating. So they include things such as hand washing, covering our mouths and noses when we sneeze so we're not spreading, hand washing again so we're not, when we pick things up, we're not touching our face with things that are on the surface, good nutrition, keeping ourselves well hydrated, plenty of bed rest to make sure that we're not overtired. So those are just general good things to do to maximize our opportunity to stay healthy.
When it comes to hand washing, is there a preference of soap over the alcohol-based rubs? Does it matter?
No, it doesn't matter how you wash your hands.
Okay.
But soapy water or alcohol-based washes, it really doesn't matter. The important thing is to frequently wash your hands and keep clean, and then try not to touch your face if you're coughing and sneezing as well.
Okay. What about the use of chlorine bleach? I mean, just for cleanups around the house and that kind of thing, does that help? Does that?
That's hard to know.
You know, you hear that, and that's why I wanted to ask you.
Yeah. I don't think it can hurt. But I wouldn't count on that.
Okay.
Of course, it's always important to keep your home clean and the surfaces clean. Soapy water would be just fine.
Okay. Let's talk about the vaccines. Exactly. I know there are different types of vaccines and how do they work. And, well, I think you've touched on when we should be vaccinated. But can you just explore vaccine with us?
Absolutely. So a couple of things just to maybe get started with about the vaccines. So vaccines for influenza have been available for many, 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 many years in the United States. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of doses of vaccines have been used. So there's a long history of using influenza vaccines in a very safe and effective way. And it's proven that the best tool to prevent influenza is vaccination. And this is why the Centers for Disease Control recommends that everybody over the age of 6 months every year get their influenza vaccine. And we typically start up in the early fall so that people can get vaccinated before influenza really starts to circulate and spread where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So then the question is, well, how do these vaccines work? So what influenza vaccines, flu vaccines do, similar to other vaccines as well, is they tell the body to develop what we call antibodies to provide protection if they're exposed to the actual virus in the future. So the vaccines prompt the body to sort of develop an army that's ready and sort of in the body's bloodstream so that if and when they're exposed to the actual virus, if they actually get influenza, the virus gets into their body, they say, I have an army here, I'm ready to fight, and they go and they stop the virus from causing infection and disease. So they stop the virus from causing disease. And so it provides protection against influenza.
And I guess it might take
about 2 weeks to work.
Okay, that's just what I was going to ask you. And I guess it might take about 2 weeks to develop these antibodies?
That's right.
Okay. All right.
That's right. It takes about 2 weeks to develop the antibodies for the body to respond to the vaccine and develop those antibodies. And then those antibodies are there ready to fight.
Now, as I understand it, there are various types of vaccines. I mean, you can get the flu mist or a nasal spray, or you can get a shot. Would you distinguish these various types of vaccines and the differences and specify who gets what?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there are many different kinds of flu vaccines that are available. The important thing is that they're all effective. And so it's really a matter of preference and also what's available.
Oh, okay.
So just to start with, in the United States, influenza vaccine number of doses that are made every year and that are given to the population range upwards of 150 million doses, something between 120 and 150 million doses of influenza vaccine. That's a lot of doses of vaccine. Of course, there's over 400 million people in the United States. Okay. So, unfortunately, not everybody does get vaccinated who should. But in general, about 120, 150 million doses are what the public asks for every year. Mm-hmm. So that's what's produced. It is not possible for one vaccine manufacturer to make that many doses. So there are multiple vaccine manufacturers who make vaccine influenza. And they make it in different varieties because people like to have choice. So we have vaccines that can be given as an injection into the muscle. We call that the shot, right, the influenza shot.
Okay.
That's in a syringe, and the vaccine is given into the muscle. There are influenza vaccines that are available for young children and younger age adults that can be given as a drip into the nose. There are influenza vaccines now that instead of giving as an injection into the muscle, they can be given as an injection under the skin. We call that subcutaneous.
Okay.
Or intradermal, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many different varieties of influenza vaccine. Some vaccines are specifically for very young children. Some vaccines are specifically indicated for the older adults, people 65 and older. So we have a lot of different variety, which helps us get up to that 120, 150 million doses every year. The important thing is that people be vaccinated. And then there's one other new development in the last 3 years. Up until 3 years ago, influenza vaccines, regardless of if they were given in the nose or in the muscle, they had what we called three strains of influenza. We called them three-strain vaccines. And it has been known, scientists have known for the last decade, that there are actually four strains of influenza that circulate and cause disease in any given year. And 3 years ago, vaccines became available that have four strains of influenza. The vaccine company where I'm a researcher, we developed these four-strain vaccines, and they're actually the only vaccines we make now are the four-strain vaccine. And they offer the opportunity for the broadest protection because they have four strains, and we don't know what strains are going to circulate every year. So having four strains gives us an opportunity for broadest protection. So in summary, there are vaccines that can be given in the muscle, under the skin, in the nose, three strains in those vaccines, and four strains in the vaccines as well.
Well, how does one know
that they're all effective?
Well, how does one know whether to get the three or four strain vaccine?
Right. So the cost, as I mentioned, there's such a great need for so many doses of influenza vaccine. The Centers for Disease Control, the way they make the recommendation is they say that there are three strain and four strain vaccines available. The four strain vaccine may provide broader protection, but see what's available at your doctor's office in the pharmacy. The four strain may provide the broadest protection, but if the four strain vaccine is not available, go ahead and get yourself the three strain vaccine because we don't want to miss an opportunity for vaccination.
Okay. All right. Is there a difference in cost? Not at all.
There is a slight difference in cost between the three-strain vaccine and the four-strain vaccine. There's also a slight difference in cost between the vaccine that's given in the muscle versus the vaccine that's dropped into the nose. And there's also slight differences in the cost of the vaccine for the vaccine that's for people 65 and older and for those younger.
We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I'm talking with Dr. Leonard Friedland. Dr. Friedland, we were talking about vaccines before we went on break. Should one consult a physician before being vaccinated? You know, I say that because you can almost go any place now and be vaccinated. You know, you can go to the pharmacy and the grocery store. You can go to your pharmacy, you know, which I think is great. It's very convenient. But are there circumstances when you should not be vaccinated, maybe? Or you need to consult your physician before you are?
So I think the most important thing is that we have as many opportunities as possible for people to be vaccinated if that's something they choose to do. And, of course, the recommendation is that virtually everybody over 6 months of age be vaccinated every year.
Okay.
Fortunately, there are many options for people to be vaccinated as far as where they can be vaccinated, in their doctor's office, in their place of work, mm-hmm. And at their retail pharmacies. For example, health fairs. And so one should consult a health care provider. It does not need to be a physician.
Okay.
But it should be a health care provider. And, for example, if we take the retail pharmacies, the retail pharmacists are skilled, trained health care providers that can discuss the benefits and the potential risks of vaccination, just as they can with other medications, with people who come into the retail pharmacy. So if one opts to get their influenza vaccine at their local pharmacy, they would have a discussion with the pharmacist about that, and the pharmacist would discuss that with the individual, and then they could receive their vaccine. Now, there are some people who should not be vaccinated or should only be vaccinated with a certain type of vaccine. So, for example, there's a very small, but there are a few people in the United States, a very small minority who have a very severe egg allergy.
Mm-hmm.
And for that very small number of people, there's a particular vaccine that they should receive versus another. People who are immunocompromised are mm-hmm. on medications, let's say, because they have a cancer under treatment or they have another immunocompromising condition, and those individuals should receive the type of influenza vaccine that's given in the muscle rather than in the nose, because the vaccine in the nose is what we call a live, weakened vaccine, and those vaccines shouldn't be given to people with severe immunocompromising conditions. Same thing with pregnant women. Pregnant women should receive the influenza injection, not the influenza nasal drip. Mm-hmm. So it's always important to speak to the healthcare provider, let them know about who you are, your medical conditions, and then they'll be able to choose with the patient the proper vaccine for them. But the important thing is that vaccines are available in many different settings, and we can come back to cost. The cost is also should not be an issue for influenza vaccination, which is really, really great.
Okay. Would you distinguish at this point the difference? We've talked about it, the difference between seasonal flu and what some call, you know, stomach flu. They are not the same.
Right. So the seasonal flu that you refer to versus the stomach flu, the seasonal flu would be the actual influenza infection, which occurs during in the Northern Hemisphere in the fall and winter months, and then sometimes into the early spring, characterized by fever, cough, chills, runny nose, weakness, shaking, chills, and muscle aches. That is the type of influenza that's something that is lays you up in bed, miss school, miss work, and occasionally you can develop pneumonia and dehydration and be hospitalized, and unfortunately it can get even worse. Versus the stomach flu would be another type of infection that would cause some vomiting and some diarrhea, maybe with some low-grade fever, and would last a day or two and you would recover. And the stomach flu can occur pretty much all year long.
Okay.
So during this time of year when we start to see influenza cause disease in the United States, if people start to have that fever, cough, runny nose, shakes, chills, weakness, they should speak to their health care provider, make sure what's going on, and make sure they're on the road to recovery. And occasionally there's some medication that can help as well to shorten the duration. And if it gets worse, they need to absolutely follow up to make sure that they're getting the right treatment.
Well, my next question is, at what point, we're talking about seasonal flu again now, at what point does one need to go to a physician? I mean, because it sounds, I mean, I guess if it sounds, you know, a lot of times people take care of themselves at home. Do they really need to go to a physician for the flu?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's where people need to use their judgment.
Okay.
Parents use their judgment. They know their kids, and people know themselves. And if they feel that, you know, they're just, this is not your ordinary illness, then that's the time they should call their doctor and say, you know, this is what's going on. Let's talk about this. Maybe I should come in on and be seen. So trust your judgment. And if this is not something that, you know, if you feel this is not your typical type of infection, your typical type of cold, then that's time to be seen.
Yeah, because you had mentioned complications of the flu can be relatively serious. I mean, from ear infections or sinus infections to worsening chronic conditions, diabetes, asthma, heart failure, all of that can be exacerbated by the flu, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We hear so much about... Yeah, go right ahead.
No, please.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, we hear so much about Tamiflu. How effective is it?
Right. So Tamiflu is an antiviral medication.
Mm-hmm.
There's another antiviral medication called Relenza as well.
Okay.
They're both by prescription, and they can be used to shorten the duration of influenza. If they're given early in the illness, they can shorten the duration by a couple of days. So they can be very effective. And for people who are developing a more severe case of influenza, and for those who have underlying medical conditions that could predispose them from getting severe influenza, then the Relenza and Tamiflu are options. But again, they're not over-the-counter, so they need to be done under the direction of a healthcare provider. And so it's important that, again, if people feel that they're just not, you know, this is not your typical infection, or if they have an underlying medical condition, they should definitely speak with their doctor because there's these antiviral medications can help. But what's even more effective is to prevent the infection to start with, and that's where vaccination plays our best role, because it is our best tool for influenza, is to prevent it through vaccination.
Okay. Talk about the use of aspirin in the flu season. If I remember correctly, there was a big scare about using aspirin because, some years back, right? I'm not quite sure. It's, as we're talking, it's coming back to me. But there was I remember the use of aspirin could lead to, what's that syndrome, a liver disease. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay.
So, right. So the use of aspirin and influenza is not recommended. There are some complications that can occur in that situation. So aspirin is generally not used much at all now to treat people who have colds and fever. Mm-hmm. We tend to use medications in the what we call the non-steroidals, so your ibuprofen type of medications. But aspirin and influenza should be avoided.
Okay.
And the condition you're speaking is called Reye's syndrome.
That's it. That's
R-E-Y-E-S.
It. Yes. Mm-hmm. Reye's syndrome. I remember. Now, what about home remedies? In these last few minutes before we close, I want to talk about recovery and prognosis. But I also, while we're talking about treatment, what are there any particular home remedies? I mean, I would think you always hear drink fluids, get plenty of rest, avoid alcohol and tobacco. Does the warm chicken soup help? I mean, what's beneficial? Is there anything that one can do?
Well, in general, you know, tea is great for hydration. If somebody has a lot of upper airway congestion with a lot of secretions in nasal secretions, then dehumidifiers can help as well, you know, keep the air a bit moist. So these things can't hurt, but it's always better to prevent because you just don't want to have this type of infection, and you also don't want to be spreading it. Mm-hmm. To those around you, your children and your coworkers and your co-students and others. And that's why vaccination is so important. And there are so many options now about influenza and vaccination and the options available.
So one should certainly pursue those, because so often we hear of and experience coworkers who may come to work and aren't feeling well, but just feel like they have to make it to work. So if you're vaccinated, that can address that.
Right. And if you see a coworker who's sick, your best thing to do is to ask your coworker to go home and not be there spreading illness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important as well to tell your coworkers about influenza vaccination. If it's available at work, great. In the retail pharmacies, the doctor's offices, there's a lot of resources out there at the CDC.gov and at the GSK. We have the website called Choose 4, Choose More.
Mm-hmm.
Talks about the 4-strain vaccines. And on the CDC website, there's a map. They call it Health Map. And you can type in your zip code, and you can find out what pharmacies in your area have influenza vaccine. And we started to speak earlier, so I just want to make sure that we covered this, that influenza vaccines are covered under all insurance plans.
Okay.
So because the CDC recommends that everybody over the age of 6 months receive an influenza vaccine every year, influenza vaccines should be free of charge to people who have insurance. So they're covered under what we call the Vaccines for Children program, which is a CDC-funded program for vaccination for people under the age of 18. They're covered under the Affordable Care Act at no cost to patients. And they're also covered under Medicare as well. So it's always important to check with your doctor and your pharmacy what insurance plan you have, and it should cover your influenza vaccine at no cost. And so this is really, really important, because it's so important to make sure that people don't have barriers to get vaccinated. And there's so many options out there now, including these four-strain vaccines. So ask your healthcare provider, ask your pharmacist, and make sure you get vaccinated and those that you, you know, your loved ones around you and your coworkers as well.
Okay. Well, Dr. Friedland, I know the effects of the flu are more severe and last longer than those of common cold. So we've got that really taken care of in that arena. But let's look at the prognosis of the flu. I mean, what can one expect in recovery?
That's a really important thing to cover, and I'm glad you brought that up. Most people can expect to recover and get back to their baseline health.
Mm-hmm.
However, particularly people who are older, the elderly, 65, 75, the elderly, and particularly the elderly who have underlying medical conditions, they often will have a very difficult time recovering. And so they may recover from the infection. The infection may be cleared, but then they're left with medical problems, with weakness, with inability to gain back all of their strength.
Mm-hmm.
They may have some respiratory difficulties as their lungs were injured from the virus and the inflammation that occurred in their lungs. So we unfortunately see that particularly the elderly, that although they recover from the infection, they survive the infection, they can end up with ongoing medical problems. And that's why it's so important for everybody to be vaccinated, in particular the elderly, the young, pregnant women, and those with underlying medical conditions, because we want to give everybody the best chance to stay healthy. And influenza can be very serious, and even if you recover, which most people will, you can be left with serious problems. So the best way to tackle this is to prevent it to start with, and mm-hmm. that's where influenza comes into play. And there's plenty of vaccine available right now in the United States for people of all ages. The four-strain vaccines are available, and there's a health map on the CDC website at cdc.gov to direct people to where vaccines are available in their pharmacy. Doctors have influenza vaccines in their offices, and I'm sure you'll also find it at work and in health fairs. So, and given that there shouldn't be a financial cost for vaccination for people who have insurance, then there's really the barriers are broken down, and people should really take advantage of something that can truly be very beneficial.
Because I know pneumonia is a real serious side effect of the flu, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, it can be.
It can be. Talk just briefly about Guillain-Barré syndrome, because is that something that is involved with the flu that people often, well, I know it's relatively rare, but would you talk about it?
Right. So Guillain-Barré syndrome is a inflammatory disorder of the nerves that can produce weakness and of the muscles. The nerves control the muscles, and then if the muscles get weak, people can have all sorts of problems, including problems breathing. Guillain-Barré syndrome is a very, very rare condition.
Okay.
And it's something that we always, you know, we want to make sure that people remain healthy, but it's not something to be generally concerned about from vaccination.
Okay. In this last minute, what other animals does the flu infect? I guess, does the flu infect other animals? We hear of avian flu and swine flu.
Right.
Besides humans, I guess, yes. Dogs, horses, pigs, all of them can get the flu, right?
See, that's one of the that's why it's so important
okay. To
vaccinate, because influenza has many hosts.
Mm-hmm.
Not only does influenza infect the human as a host, but influenza can infect and cause disease in birds, in pigs, and in other animals, and it can spread between. People have close contact with birds and with
mm-hmm.
pigs and with other animals. And so the viruses can mix between the species and new viruses can emerge. And that's one of the reasons that we have vaccination every year, that we're always looking at those 100 laboratories all around the world all year long to see what's happening. Are there any changes in the influenza so that we can get ahead of this and make sure that the vaccines cover what's circulating, because we can see these changes occur between all the various hosts.
We are out of time. You have been very, very helpful, and I appreciate you sharing your expertise with us. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollifield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.